Hi, I'm Tara Lynn of Geek Saga Entertainment, and welcome to Hot D Takes. This podcast series covers HBO's House of the Dragon episode by episode with myself, an avid reader of all things ASWAF, and my friend Manny, a Game of Thrones and House of the Dragon fan who is unsullied, aka has never read the books, being your stalwart hosts. So first things first, you can find me on Facebook, Instagram, and Threads, TikTok, Twitter at Geek Saga.
And I'm Manny, the aforementioned unsullied co-host, and you can find me on Facebook and Instagram at Benissimo Art. Thanks for joining us for this episode, which we will cover House of the Dragon Season 2, Episode 7, titled The Red Sewing.
As a reminder, expect spoilers from the episode we're covering, but less obvious, there will be very minimal book spoilers, only from material from Fire and Blood that has actually been covered already in the show. Fire and Blood, of course, being the source material for House of the Dragon. We will kick off with our episode summary, and then before we get into our hot takes, we'll be going over some predictions that Manny made prior to watching the episode. Additional discussion of these predictions will definitely be woven into our hot takes and or our episode-specific favorites roundup at the conclusion of this discussion. But again, we're still pretty new with the predictions, so continue to bear with us as we feel it out.
We also have a rating system that we will, like true Targaryens, fill in when and where we please. And that system includes rating things on a scale of 1 to 10 Targ eyebrows.
Just one last piece of business before we dig in. Don't forget that Geek Saga Entertainment has a Patreon with 10 tiers ranging from $1 a month to $40 a month. It offers tons of ways to support us and receive some great perks in return, including early access to these Hot D Takes podcast episodes. Check it out at patreon.com/geeksaga_entertainment.
And now it's time for the long and the short of it, our weekly episode summary.
We open with a dragon standoff. Rhaenyra acting commanding, but obviously concerned about how badly this could go. Thankfully, Adam is more than ready to bow the knee and serve her, which garners him an invitation to be a guest at Dragonstone. Unfortunately, while Rhaenyra might be pleased at this new development, when Missaria helps to egg on with her intel on the many Targ bastard children that surely exist, not everyone is hype about this new plan to look for dragon riders amongst these possible Targaryen bastards. Namely, some of Rhaenyra's council members are scoffing at the idea. Jace is downright angry because of what it could say about his future right to rule due to his parentage. And later we learn that the Dragon Keepers are quite possibly the most upset of all. Corlys, however, actually seems to maybe possibly be a bit proud of his bastard son, Adam. So much so that he strongly hints to Alyn, Adam's brother, that he should try out this dragon rider thing as well. But dang it, Alyn just wants to be a sailor, and how many times does he have to repeat this desire before people will finally listen to him? Speaking of people not listening, it sounded like Daemon might be getting his way with the Riverlords now that Lil Oscar Tully is Lord Paramount, but most of the new Lord Tully's advice and insight for Daemon seems to go in one ear and out the other. So no wonder Daemon is surprised when Lil Oscar has to save him from the angry Riverlords, first with insults and then with basically giving Daemon no choice but to behead his one true Riverlands ally, Willem Bracken. Another alliance that we didn't even know existed until now, but that might also be on tenterhooks, is between Laerys Littlefooter and Grand Maester Orwyle. On the one hand, the Maester is acting like he's helping Baby Gon. On the other, he's obviously taking, if not orders, then certainly pushy suggestions from Littlefooter. Either way, Baby Gon clearly isn't doing too hot on the Littlefooter recovery plan.
You'd think maybe Alicent would be around to help care for her ailing son, but nope. She decided she was grossed out by everything going on in the Red Keep and is off on a camping trip in the Kingswood. Nor is she the only person who seems to be ignoring a lot of what's going on in King's Landing in general, as Littlefooter dismisses the rumors of Sea Smoke having found a rider and Rhaenyra's handmaiden, Alinda, is able to run around spreading the news that if they want a chance to claim a dragon, the bastard Targs of the city should report to Dragonstone. Which, of course, many of them do. They're led straight to a group interview with Vermithor, and he turns the interview into a barbecue buffet for himself. One that leaves very few survivors, though in the end, two familiar faces, Hugh and Olaf, live to see another day. And to each ride a dragon, with Hugh claiming Vermithor himself, and Olaf stumbling into a meet cute with Silverwing. The latter pair immediately takes to the wing and flies all the way to King's Landing, causing Aemon to run off and fetch Vhagar to chase them back to Dragonstone. Well, until he notices that it's not just one dragon he'd be confronting. Shoot, it's not even only two dragons. It is, in fact, three of them. Hey, at least Vhagar listens to him this time when he orders her to turn away. Meanwhile, as happy as Rhaenyra is with her newfound dragon strength, there's something iffy going on in the Vale. Rhaena appears to have abandoned her babysitting duties in favor of finding the wild dragon terrorizing the local sheep. But of course, we know she hasn't had any luck with the dragons in the past, so we're anxiously awaiting the outcome of whatever is going on here.
And while we're waiting, we're going to get into our discussion, starting with, of course, Maester Manny's predictions for this week. Okay, what was your first one?
Okay, look, I was a little off, all right? I was a little off this night, all right? Look, Adam will not want to join the fight as a dragon rider.
I mean,
bro, he literally...
The exact opposite.
He was like, yeah, absolutely. It's good for everybody. Let's do it. I'm like, you son of a bitch. Couldn't just give me one.
Well, we'll get into that for sure. His decision, whatnot, in our hot takes. But you weren't totally off with all of them, so...
Well, my second one is Daemon will overstep and try to run the show.
I feel like we could say you hit this one kind of on the nose. At the very least, on the side of the nose. Because it was a bit of a vague prediction. So I'm not like sure you totally meant try to run the show with Oscar Tully and like exactly what happened there. But Daemon did certainly try to run the show with all that at first. And I don't want to say any more about that because, again, we have some hot takes to discuss. Wink, wink. But yeah, I think you meant to be vague with this one and it paid off.
You know, if you're going to do psychic stuff, you got to be as vague as possible, man.
Yeah.
You just got to let them believe a little bit. So that way they start throwing the money at you. They're like, man, Maester Manny, man, he knows his stuff. Let's give him money.
If we were doing this live, I'd say we need some super chats for Maester Manny's prediction.
There you go. Okay, so this one, yeah, almost. This next one was an almost. Okay, the show will end with Rhaenyra and Aemon riding towards each other on their dragons.
Did you mean the episode would end that way?
Yes, I meant the episode was going to end that
way. Yeah, I figured you meant the episode and not the entire show because we have a whole other episode coming. I'd say you were at least 75% on the mark with this since Aemon flew Vhagar most of the way to Dragonstone. And while Rhaenyra wasn't, I don't know, I'd give you 85% actually, because while Rhaenyra wasn't flying toward him, she was certainly like fronting with her dragons. And 85% actually, I think, is probably a better percentage. She wasn't flying toward him, but if he'd gone any further, she sure as hell would have, I think, or at least if not her, then one of the other ones would have.
Oh, look, all I can say is that if I made this prediction and that happened and it was 2,000 years from now, people would be saying I was Nostradamus. They'd be like, dude. He was so on the money with what happened.
But we awarded you no points for...
No points.
For the first theory. Oh my God, what's that line from Billy Madison?
Oh gosh, yeah. We're all stupider if Rami heard everything you just said. Man, God have mercy
That's not true at all, because like... I feel like it would only be like we're stupid of her having listened to this if you had said something just totally and completely off the wall, because being wrong in a prediction is one thing. If you had said like Adam mounts Sea Smoke and kills Rhaenyra, then that would have been a little like way over the top.
That would have been a bit much.
Well, since we're back on the subject of Adam and Rhaenyra's little confrontation, let's get into our hot takes.
Hot take number one: once upon a time in the West, Uros. They really jumped right into this episode with that Rhaenyra and Adam Hall scene. Literally, like, it's right after what happened.
And I still stand by the fact that it would have been better for them to end last week's episode with Rhaenyra and him on the beach and her asking, you know, what do you mean to do, or whatever she said, because it felt, well, I don't know. I mean, it wasn't like that or anything, but I still stand by my...
It really should have ended, or at least ended with them on the beach at first, and then maybe the exposition could have started the next episode, maybe.
Yeah, because again, it wasn't some big secret who was riding that dragon after what happened in last week's episode. We already knew who was going to be with Sea Smoke. I will say this, and maybe this is just me, but is it me, or was the CGI kind of crappy when they first opened and you see the dragons like far away facing off on the beach? It looked like they looked way too smooth, almost like it was unfinished. They hadn't finished putting the textures into the dragons for that scene or something. And it got way better once they got close up. It was great, but that far away shot, it was just like, I kind of felt like I was looking at a toy set. Fancy, you know, like one of those premiere level toy sets.
Yeah. I'm going to go ahead and just agree with you, because when Rhaenyra is on the screen, I don't really pay attention to anything else or any of the backgrounds or anything like that. But I'm going to take your word for it. I'm going to say, yeah, the CGI was terrible.
The very first couple seconds or whatever, when they were far away. As soon as they were close in and showing the two of them, Rhaenyra with Cyrax behind her, Adam with Sea Smoke behind him, everything about that was great. It was just that one first scene of them far away that I was like, it felt very much like season one first episode when they had the far away flying dragons, and I was like, this is not good. Please be better than this.
No, yeah, I remember that first season when they brought him out, man. I was scared. I was like, oh god, this looks terrible. It was like that new Marvel quality, you know. Marvel special effects are so terrible now for some reason. Anything that's post Endgame, that's special effects, I don't know what happened, but they're just terrible. And that's what that first season made me think of, and I was like, no, let's not do this
again. Like, it was that brief moment, and it was so great. The whole rest, everything about the dragons was so great the whole rest of the episode, but I don't know. It really weirdly felt like they put in a not totally finished rendering to me in that first moment. But that said, whatever about that. I loved how Cyrax was being so vocal, and my dog, my dog with the big ears, if you don't know what I'm talking about, you just follow me on Instagram at A Geek Saga. You'll see a picture of her if you scroll back a little bit. I post pictures of my pets quite often, but my dog has very gigantic ears, and she was cocking her head with her ears standing almost all the way up, which they hardly ever do, it literally unless she's hearing something very interesting. And Cyrax was squealing and whatever the hell noises he was making, and Ellie's just like, huh, what's happening here? I'm guessing I watched both the little clips after the episode and the House that Dragons Built thing, and I was hoping they would say something about it, because it felt to me like I was wondering, okay, is Cyrax being extra vocal because he's like, hey, Sea Smoke, they know each other. I mean, Sea Smoke's original rider, Laenor, was Rhaenyra's husband, regardless of, you know, them not spending a ton of time together or whatever. They had a good relationship for what they could have. And I don't know, it's like, it made me wonder, like, he's like, hey, bro, I know you. Yeah. Are we going to be friends again? Or do we have to fight, bro?
Front. Exactly.
Other than that, Rhaenyra was just so, Emma Darcy, they played this scene so fucking well. You could see that commanding Rhaenyra presence, but you could also see the concern, possibly even fear. What have we gotten ourselves into? What is this? Who is this person? And Adam is just like, I will serve you, you know? She asks what he wants, and he's like, I want to learn the ways of dragon riders and serve you, my queen, and bends the knee immediately. And Rhaenyra, this is one thing I was like, she's like, why do you bend the knee so quickly when you just got raised to this position of power? And I'm over here like, he has one dragon. You still have two, because Jace's dragon is still there at Dragonstone with you guys. So you still have two dragons. There is a concern here. Of course, you don't want to lose Sea Smoke, et cetera, et cetera. But there's not so much concern that you need to be like, why are you bending the knee to me? I feel like it's, in the books, Rhaenyra loses trust in people a lot for good reason very early. And I feel like in the show, they've given her enough people who trust her and who she can trust to where it felt a little bit off for her to be like, oh, this lowborn dude with one dragon is such a huge threat. I don't know. Do you know what I'm saying? You having not read the text, you might have different feelings on it from me, or possibly even stronger feelings. I don't know. What do you think?
No, my feelings on it are simple. It's just, hey, dude, when you have, you know, the really fancy car and one of the poors are driving it, you know, it's like, wait a minute, why does that guy have this car? That's really weird. Rhaenyra is just sitting here like, wait a minute, how does a lowborn have a dragon? You know, and I don't know. I kind of felt like people were kind of like that. And it was like, guys, didn't you want riders? Yeah. I don't know. I can see her her reluctance, because she probably doesn't know where Adam stands to begin with. Is it going to be like an ally? Is he going to serve me, or is he just going to go do his own thing?
Or I suppose fly off to King's Landing and back them is probably the bigger thing. But him doing that would be the same thing as him bending the knee to her. That's why it felt a little bit off to me. And this isn't a huge complaint or anything. It's just, it felt a little bit off to me, because he would surely get the same reaction if he had just picked the dragon up and flew it off to King's Landing, you know, and bowed his knee immediately to them. Either way, I still liked the whole scene.
It was a beautiful scene. It was great. But also, like, how far away are these places from one another? Because they make it sound like it's far, and then it's all of a sudden, it's like, oh no, we just happened to show up here. We just flew right over.
Driftmark is very close to Dragonstone, and King's Landing and Dragonstone are literally across the bay from each other. In these situations, they are actually very close. Especially on a very large dragon, it wouldn't have taken Rhaenyra very long to fly over to Driftmark, which is where Adam of Hall is.
Gotcha.
Okay. Hot take number two. Lil Oscar Tully is House of the Dragons, Lyanna Mormont. Discuss. Oh, yeah. There's really not much to discuss here. I just wanted to word it that way. Yes, Lil Oscar Tully is this show's Lyanna Mormont. He's not the new Lyanna Mormont, because that would imply that he is replacing the amazing Lyanna Mormont. Yeah. He is not. He is just this show's version of it. Fucking loving it so far. Got to give Damon like a little bit of props just at the beginning when he's like praising this kid. He's like, truly glorious. Well done about Oscar just succeeding his grandfather after his grandfather died. It was just like a weirdly hilarious.
Yeah, exactly. It's line. Like, dude, come on, man. You know, like.
And the kid's just, like, yeah, my grandfather just died. That's it.
That's it. That's what I did.
What do you think?
Yeah. My grandfather died.
Yeah, really, though. This kid is so great. Straight up telling Daemon Targaryen, of all people, there's one problem. They all hate you in regard to the Riverlords. That's Kess. And then, as we kind of mentioned in the summary, of course, then Daemon really should have shut up and let Oscar do the talking, because for fuck's sake, my dude, kiddo already told you they hated you and you're just here to make it worse, apparently. But it's okay, because Oscar takes the scene back. He calls Daemon loathsome. He decries Daemon's comportment since arriving at Harrenhal. And again, I'm so here for this. I'm so here for this kid. And then how smart it was that he made Daemon dispense the justice on Willem Bracken rather than kill one of his own vassals himself. No complaints.
No.
10 out of 10 Targ eyebrows for Lil Oscar. And I don't know if that's the nickname we're going for with him. We might change it. But for now, it's Lil Oscar. He's little.
He is little. Lil Oscar. No, I'm right there with you, man. And the scene is just absolutely fantastic. You know, I mean, I love the fact that this kid was just smart. Because the way I saw it, it was like, okay, he's just this young kid. He's inheriting his grandfather's stone. And he's going to be like a not know what the fuck he was doing. And like, yeah, he may not know how to lead a house yet. But he went out there and was just. And even the way he was wording it and everything seemed so natural, like he was trying to find his footing in all of this. And he was so right, man. And the delivery was just fucking perfect, man, with the way he was like dropping that shit out and then making Daemon. And you can see Daemon's face just kind of cringing. You know, everyone's looking at him and he's just like, he has to keep his mouth shut. He can't say anything because he needs this fucking alliance.
And it's funny, too, because it's like we're comparing him to Lyanna Mormont, who also was obviously thrust into leadership of her house very young. On top of that, she was a girl, which is also, you know, makes things a little more tough in Westeros. But it's almost like in comparison to Robb Stark, who looked to Catelyn for a lot of insight. And then like when he didn't listen to her is when things went the worst. And also when Ned died was just kind of, and granted they were, I think I would guess Robb was probably just a lot closer to his father. And it was also a very different like sudden death. So I understand all of that, but it just seems like we have these two young kids, Lyanna and Game of Thrones and Oscar here, who are taking on this huge mantle and just being kick-ass about it from the very start. And yeah, I don't know. Compared to Robb, it's like, oh, well, no wonder you failed. Sorry, not sorry. Robb Stark. I cannot fucking wait to see more of Oscar. I was kind of wondering what they were doing with the Willem Blackwood thing. They've killed him off now, and that might make room for, just going to say, bring on Benjicott Blackwood. It's not a spoiler, it's just a name. But I'm very interested to see where they go with the Blackwoods. I'm hoping they don't just like ignore them entirely from now on, that this like guy they created for the show is dead. But I doubt they will. So
yeah. You know, man, there was a real turning point for me watching this episode, because it was like with Daemon, even though this has kind of been really long time coming throughout the entire season, man, it just really shows how much trash he is, how he's like manipulating and how he's doing this shit. So Daemon is like off my cool list. He's not allowed to sit with me anymore.
I mean, in this case, though, he tried to manipulate and then he got fucking manipulated hardcore in return by this little child.
No, and he fucking got served. And that's what made me realize, because it was like, it felt really good to see his ass get served like that. Yeah, fucking good. Like, you fucking deserve this shit, you know? And I was like, God, this guy is fucking trash. Just the way he was trying to manipulate that fucking situation.
And also the kind of like heartless, weird, rude, and still funny / hilarious line about like, truly glorious. Well done. About this kid's grandfather or whatever dying. Just,
yeah.
Wow. Wow.
So proud of you. What an achievement that you're still alive. You know, like
that you finally ascended to head of House Tully and I can use you. Oh, wait. Oopsie.
Exactly. He's like, congratulations. You have now become important to me. All right, Damon.
But then he gets his. So
that was good.
Okay. Next up.
Hot take number 3. Wet Hot Westerosi Summer starring Alicent Hightower. Alicent, I'm cut in the same place as Rhaenyra once was, and there are rats everywhere because my son, who is now severely injured, killed all the rat catchers. Hightower goes on a camping trip to clear her head. Look, everybody got to break free every now and then. See, this is what's weird for me now, is because now I'm starting to feel sorry for Alicent now. Like, as the show is progressing, I'm really starting to feel bad for her, where I'm like, fuck, dude.
Listen, like, she's just out there running around in the woods saying maybe she'll never go back to King's Landing. Like, lol, what? And it's both weird to me and also somehow not that no one is wondering where she's been. Sure, Baby Gon is on the major struggle bus right now. Littlefooter is busy helping Baby Gon. Aemon dismissed her in more ways than one. Fuckboy Coleslaw is away on business. Helaena is probably just happy that her mom isn't around to pull her away from her bugs and into more traumatic experiences. But still, she's the queen dowager. Like, nobody is thinking, where did she go for days, it seems? She's got one of the Kingsguard with her, too. Where did nobody, if they're not wondering where she's gone, where's Sir Rickard?
And they don't care. This is a moment that all moms fear, and dads, too, when their kids don't need them anymore. They've grown up, they found their own way. So now she really doesn't matter. She has no place at the council anymore. One of her kids is half dead. She's not even there. Aemon doesn't fucking give a shit. Shoos her off at every fucking moment, dude. For Alicent, it is a cruel, cruel summer. I wasn't going to sing it because
I don't know any of the lyrics to that song besides like those.
Yeah.
Don't leave me here on my, no, but she wants to be on her own. Please leave me here on my own. I hemmed and hawed about making this a hot take, but I did think it was an interesting decision on the part of the show creators and writers to have her just fuck off for a little bit. Talk about how she doesn't really want to go back to King's Landing. And when she was swimming around in that lake, I was actually a little bit worried they were going to do something like worse, which is what made me decide to make it a hot take. So I want to say, like, I was worried they would go there and I'm glad they didn't. So there's that at least.
Yeah. Cause I thought that too, when you see her, like right before they show her floating in the water, you just see her hair under the water. I was like, man, did she just drown herself, dude? Like, what? But no, we've all been where Alicent is right now, right? We just like, look, we got to get away. We're going to like just go jump in the water. We're going to go jump in a fucking creek and just vanish from the kingdom for forever, or just for a little bit.
As like a productive adult in society, especially if you have a family, which I do right now, and or pets, which also are hard to just like up and walk away from for even a short period of time. And I don't mean like abandoned. I mean like finding a baby, a pet sitter and stuff is also. So for me, it's I get the water thing, because for me, it's a shower, but not taking a shower in the terms of like standing in the shower. I will sit on the floor of the shower and just let the water like hit me until it goes cold and I can't stand it anymore.
Yep.
So I feel you a little bit in this moment, Alicent, as much as I still do not care for you. And I'm also kind of like, don't you have some responsibilities? I don't know. Like, you're not on the council anymore, but that doesn't mean you have zero responsibilities, girl.
No, she is seriously disconnecting here.
But I'm going to move on to this next hot take, which is going to be, I think, a very short one. But hot take number 4 is just hashtag confirmed. That being the theory that Hugh Hammer's mother was Sarah Targaryen. She was one of the daughters of King Jaehaerys and Queen Alicent, with Jaehaerys so far being like the longest and arguably best ruler of the kingdoms post Aegon the Conqueror. And it's long been rumored that she, Sarah, fell from grace and ended up working in a brothel, and that Hugh was in fact her son. So when he was talking to his wife and he started talking about his mother being of Targaryen descent and working in a brothel, I was like, oh, are they gonna do it? And then he said something like her brother's sons, Viserys and Daemon, and I was like, whoa, okay, they really, all right, I'm here for it, because it was one of those rumors that it was like, while it had never been outright stated, it was almost certainly true. But it's just another one of those things that I like when this show does a good theory confirmation.
Yeah.
Even something as seemingly small as this, but it also means that when Hugh claims his dragon, there's a special connection there, which I will get into later. But for now, like I said, that one was a short and sweet hot take. So,
yeah. Hot take number 5. Everyone's mad at Rhaenyra.
That might be a bit hyperbolic, but yeah, this dragon seed thing has a lot of people pissed at her. Jace's reaction was a lot. I totally understand where he was coming from, like why he's worried about the idea that, okay, well, if these random Targaryen bastards can just come in and claim a dragon because they have a little bit of blood, but they aren't any sort of nobility. And we all know who my father was. Come on. It's the thing that goes unsaid because it has to go unsaid, but that does very possibly bring his future right to rule into question, because these bastards are going to have dragons now too. So totally get the concern. It does make absolute sense, et cetera, et cetera. But I don't think he needed to be so damn schnah about it. Like, take a breath, calm down a bit. This is your mother, the queen you're talking to. Mm-hmm. She loves you. She's never been anything but good to you. Just take a breath, Jace.
Yeah, he's being a little bit much.
Well, and also, there's the line of succession thing. Like, if they keep on with the story of not having, you know, not nobody knows for sure that Harwin Strong is his father, then these people who are Targaryen bastards, they're all like older than he is anyway. Nobody knows who they're descended from. So even if they were legitimized, they would probably so far down the line of succession that it's like, anyway, calm down with the schnah.
Plus the Dragon Keepers are big mad and they storm out, and it's like, so are they going to come back? Did they just go on strike? Like, what's happening here? They're not going to come back.
You don't think so? Oh, that sounds like a Meester Manny prediction.
They're not coming back. Not this season anyway. Talk about breaking a few eggs to make an omelet, dude.
This hot take specifically is more about people's reactions. Her council members aren't necessarily mad about it, but they were definitely questioning, like, who is this rando who is riding Sea Smoke and he's lowborn and you're just like bringing him into the fold. And again, Jace's, his concerns are totally valid. His reaction is maybe a little bit over the top, especially considering like nothing's happened yet. It's just possibly going to happen. Yeah. And the Dragon Keepers are just being like classist pieces of shit, honestly. Like, first of all, like, I know you're important because you're Dragon Keepers, but the first thing they say to her is like, oh, you brought this like loser Andal, meaning somebody who is descended from like Westerosi people, in, and he failed. And like, the dragons are gods. And like, what are you doing with these, like, this riffraff? I don't know. I think you're probably right. They're mad enough that they've walked off for a bit. Who knows if they'll come back anytime soon, but also maybe they don't need to, considering.
It was disappointing. It was disappointing to see how classist they were with that.
Yeah.
Because it's like, look, like, would you guys just rather like your house burn? We need their help, you know? And if they're willing to like jump into the fray and, you know, yeah, you got one who's riding a dragon now. Like, why are you going to be weird? It's like, no, dude, come on, dude. No one builds the homeless shelter next to our subdivision. You know, it's like,
and two, the Dragon Keepers, like, they're just an order, like the Kingsguard, or I mean the Wall in a way. At this point in time, the Wall is still like a sort of honorable place to end up at if you are forced to go there. But they know the dragons really well. They help care for them, obviously, but they're not Targaryens themselves. So I don't know for sure, because I've never remembered reading any intel on them being even Valyrian. Maybe they're from Essos in general. I honestly don't know. And again, as I always say, if you're listening to this and you are a book reader and I have missed something along the way, I don't know all the things about all the things, but as far as I can recall, they never stated that the Dragon Keepers had to be like a Valyrian descent. They're certainly not Targaryen. So for them to just come stomping around and being like, they don't belong here, it's like, why? Because they weren't raised and trained in this order? Because pretty sure your Dorashtiar arguments are about as good as arguments people in this country make about certain things. Just going to say that. Leave that out there. That's all I'm going to say.
Yep. Agreed.
Now we're moving on to our last two. Next one is definitely going to be the big discussion of the episode. Let's be real. Hot take number 6, the sowing of the seeds, which was what this episode should have been named, in my opinion. It was called the Red Sowing. The term the sowing of the seeds is the term that Grandmaster Munkin gave it in the books. In the books, too, the funny thing is it's a lot more, they list out a lot more people who were not necessarily Targaryen bastards. Like, it's not just Sir Stefan Darklyn. There's several other like highborn people who come through. So I understand how it was like called the sowing in the books by a lot of people until Grandmaster Munkin came in and was like, actually, let's call it the sowing of the seeds. And in this episode, it's absolutely what it is, because all these fucking people, they come in, they're all bastards as far as we know. That's where they all came from, King's Landing. They're all a bunch of Targ or possible Targ bastards, and they all die. Yeah, the vast majority of them die. And two for sure survived, possibly three. So I want to ask you, because my feelings on it are, even though all of those people chose to take part in this, the show's choice to have Rhaenyra's soldiers block them in, especially once Vermithor started to burn them, was so not cool. And it made no sense to me. And I honestly don't feel bad that those soldiers also got burned alive after that shit.
Yeah.
It also just, it felt very cultish, what with Rhaenyra like walking among them beforehand, making all these super bold claims about what would happen if this is successful. Like, we will end all suffering, probably with no bloodshed. And it's like, oh, honey, that's a bold claim, girl.
I'd have been like, look, whoever survives this gets a $20 gift certificate to Chili's. Okay, there you go. Okay. There's a little perk there for you. No, you're absolutely right. I didn't like it at all. The guards like blocking him in. I'm like, wait a minute. What are you doing? Now it's like, no, now I don't like this anymore. Because if they would like ask me, and of course, Rhaenyra comes to me and is like, hey, Manny, I need you to try to ride this dragon. It may burn you. It may not. But if you want to do it for me, because I'm a sweetheart, you can do it. And I'll be like, oh, yeah, hell yeah. You know, I'll go walk in there. But then when I go in there and she locks the door behind me, I'd be like, whoa, wait a minute. Like, no. I didn't like that. I definitely thought it was weird. And yeah, that thing with Rhaenyra walking around them and like feeding them this bullshit, it did come off as very, very cultist.
And then it turns what happens next into what's kind of appears to be like a ritual sacrifice or like a group. We don't really know we're about to off ourselves situation. I'm guessing they made the decision to have the soldiers block them in and have Rhaenyra seem to be in agreement of that for some reason, for the express purpose of making her look bad to both the viewers and to anyone who might survive this sowing. In this case, it's for sure two people, possibly three. And the question mark there on how many is because obviously we know Hugh and Ulf survived, and it appeared that the woman who Hugh tried to save might have survived as well. We certainly did not see her die because Vermithor was fixated on Hugh. And then a few minutes later, we see the only other dragon, Silverwing, is getting all happy with Ulf over there. But if that girl did survive, will she now go back to King's Landing or go basically anywhere else and spread anti-Rhaenyra sentiments? Can't even call it propaganda at this point, let's be real.
Yeah, can't.
Will this decision to essentially fence them in cause chinks in any of the dragon seed's loyalty to Rhaenyra?
Yeah.
I'm going to go ahead and guess so, because for sure it would with me.
It would for me too. Even if I got on the beast, I'd be like, later, guys. She boxed me in to do this. Who knows what else the hell she's going to box me in to do. I definitely didn't like it, and I felt like it was completely unnecessary since everybody had already kind of sworn like their fealty to her and they were willing to do this to begin with. They shouldn't have done that. That was just bad optics.
Well, and also if they hadn't succeeded, but also hadn't died, because anybody who survived would have left with like, well, I faced this head on and it didn't work out for me. But guess what? I was there to see it work out for somebody else. And then instead of this possible one survivor going out there to spread anti-Rhaenyra sentiment about the fact that she herded these innocent people. Yes, they chose to be there, but they're still innocent into the Dragonmont and fed them to a dragon. And like Vermithor too. Vermithor first. Wow. Wow, 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 wow. Yeah. The Bronze Fury first. The second biggest dragon in Westeros, who is known for being angry AF.
If she would have just explained why that the guards, if there was some kind of explanation for it, then I think it would have been fine. But no, man, that's like going to the fucking petting zoo and there's a fucking lion, you know, and then the mother of lions is like, oh, don't worry about it. Maybe the lion will take to you. And if not, it's going to eat all 40 of you people like right now.
I mean,
and they just kind of lock the cage behind you. No.
Kind of makes me wonder, was it just, is it her, like, I'm better, is it an I'm better than thou mentality of like, well, if they can't do it, then it is what it is? I wouldn't think so, because she didn't seem, you know, she was upset about what happened with Sir Stefan Darkland. And yes, he was a knight, but like, he had less Targaryen blood in him than these people, and he was still kind of just a dude. And she accepted Adam as soon as she understood or believed or wanted to believe that he was willing to bend the knee like he did. So I think my biggest concern here is, was this her way of culling by having the soldiers trap them in? Well, if they can't ride a dragon, then we need to get rid of these bastards because they could hurt the future of my succession. Because
You know, like dead man tell no tales, right? So you don't want, see, because at first I was like, okay, I kind of get what they're doing, right? Because in the sense, it's like, because to me personally, be like, oh, do it one at a time, because you're literally, look, you can go up to a cat, most cats, and just pet it, right? Now if there is five of us that approach the cat and try to pet it, what does the cat do? It runs, it gets away, it feels surrounded, it doesn't like it. Not that the dragon would feel surrounded, but it's kind of intimidating, right? When there's so many people at one thing. But if you do it one at a time and the first five people get roasted, the other 35 may be like, you know what? I don't want to do this anymore. I'm kind of done. But
yeah, but still, they chose to be there. They're like willing to, as far as she knows, like, swear fealty to her. I don't know. I have some understanding of why they probably did it, but that doesn't mean I have to like it.
No, I know. But look, they can't ride the dragon. If they can't ride the dragon, they're just a bunch of pores and they're worthless. So you might as well just roast them and that's it. That's how we do it. It's a true Targaryen way, right?
Vermithor had a good time at least.
His belly is full.
Christ.
Hot take number 7. Coming soon, How to Train Your Dragon 4. There's actually no one way to do it.
I did like how they've been showing that, right? They showed Sea Smoke literally chasing down Adam of Hall in the last episode. But then in this episode, we have the back-to-back of Hugh's defiance versus Ulf's deference. Hugh faces down Vermithor, the fucking Bronze Fury, the second oldest and biggest dragon in Westeros, who, by the way, was King Jaehaerys's dragon. So that was his grandfather's dragon, which is a nice little connection, right? But he faces him down and he does not know Valyrian. And he's just like, come on, take me. It's very like Spartacus, honestly.
It was good.
And Vermithor's just like, yeah, all right, I guess you'll do. Not for a snack, but for a person. Yeah. And then Ulf is just trying to escape. This poor dude. There was that moment where he steps through the, I guess, you know, like the covering or whatever it was, and he smashes one of the eggs. And I was like, oh no. Oh no.
Yeah.
No,
and
no.
The thing's just behind him, like, you know, and I'm just like, whoops. Sorry.
She just starts booping him. It was like very cute. And I don't know if it was supposed to be cute, because I mean, you're right. She was probably like knocking him down, like, no, don't get up. Keep stay down. But he was just like, no, I'll take it. Please kill me quickly. I'd rather die fast than slow. And I don't know, the booping even before that felt like, what you doing here, dude? What you doing?
Yeah.
I've been down here chilling by myself. Like, Vermithor's kind of an asshole. You know, he's the Bronze Fury. They call him that for a reason. All the other dragons have like run off to do their own business with their riders. And I'm just here, I guess, with some eggs. Yeah. Boop. What you doing, little guy?
Boop, what boop. You doing here? What you doing? Just pushing him off the rock like, let's play.
But he's just like, okay, whatever. And then also fun that it was him that they showed riding over King. Mm-hmm. He's just like riding like a bucking bronco, but then like when she does that dive and he is like going, it's like being on a roller coaster and like you hate that like clack 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 if you're on one of the ones that's doing the slow ascent, but then you hit the top and it goes down and you remember why it's fun.
Yep.
I mean, at least for me, because I do not like heights at all, particularly if there's water anywhere around. And one of the first major roller coasters I went on was the Superman coaster at Six Flags New England. And it is built right next to the Connecticut River, like right next to it. So every time I went on that ride from the first time and even every time after that, I would close my eyes as we were going up. But then as soon as it goes down the hill, it's like, oh, yeah, this is why this is fun. That's what his little ride felt like to me. I thought it was really neat that it was, because I feel like Hugh would have been a lot more contained, even though he got like the bigger, arguably cooler dragon.
I wonder what it's like to ride like the bigger dragon. Like, is it like riding on the bigger airplane where you don't feel as much turbulence as opposed to the smaller airplane?
I mean, you're out with the elements, though, so
I mean, I don't know. Maybe he has more warmth coming off of him, so maybe it's not as bad when they're high up. I thought about that. I'm like, would I want a smaller dragon to ride, or I want a bigger dragon?
I would want a smaller one, I think, because I think the bigger ones are, I mean, you could tell, too, like, when Aemon is flying Vhagar and he like tries to turn her, even like her turn is like, kind of plotting for dragon speed. Like the Windy Boy is, he's like the brand new steel coaster, and Vhagar is like the super old wooden roller coaster. The wooden, like,
you're not sure where this is going to fall apart. It's going to fall apart on his way down. I wouldn't want a smaller dragon because I just want to feel a little bit bigger on the dragon. Because like if they put me on Vhagar, they're going to be like, hey, that dragon has no rider. No, wait a minute. It does. It's a little baby. You know, like,
yeah, it was, this is a little bit off topic from like the idea of like How to Train Your Dragon, but maybe not, because I don't know how much Ulf was really controlling Silverwing when he was flying her over King's Landing. But also it was very interesting that all the people are like, oh my God, there's a dragon. Oh my God, there's a dragon. And the immediate thought is, oh shit, a dragon has a rider. I mean, you actually see that look between Laris and what's that other guy's name? I can never remember. Whatever. The other guy's name who tried to give him the whisper about Sea Smoke having a rider earlier. You can see that look between them like, oh shit, maybe we should have listened to that whisper. But it's not Sea Smoke, so no. Again, I like how they're doing this. They're showing the dragons being paired off in different ways. It's sort of like, it's almost like watching like a sitcom with romances in it. It's like, who's going to end up with who, and how are they going to start their relationship? Are they a Ross and a Rachel, or a Chandler and a Monica? We don't know. I feel like Ulf and Silverwing are Chandler and Monica, and
oh God,
Vermithor and Hugh are Ross and Rachel. But I could be wrong about that, because there could, if Rhaena is actually going after a dragon and actually somehow succeeds, that could be a Ross and Rachel. I'm just putting that out there. In which case, that leaves Vermithor and Hugh off on their own, not with a Friends reference. I never even watched Friends until recently. Matthew Perry passed away, and I actually listened to his memoir as an audiobook. And then I was like, well, I'll give Friends a try. I still didn't actually finish it. I think I gave up like before the last season, because it's not my sort of show. It was a good thing. It was a good thing for the most part to like have on in the background, though. But anyway, so I like am probably the worst person to give Friends relationship references to these pairings, but or maybe before or by the end of next week's episode, I will figure out some better comparisons of TV relationships to give.
I watched Friends when it was airing, but it was one of those things that I just kind of did in the background. But I really just watched it because of Phoebe. I had a thing for Phoebe.
Oh yeah, she's great.
That's why I watched it. She was like, even though she was the most kookiest, I felt like she was the one that was the most relatable, because everybody was being so weird all the time.
Vermithor and Hugh might be Rory and Jess. Vermithor being Jess and Hugh being Rory from Gilmore Girls. I'll have to think on this. Now I'm stuck on this whole thing. Anyway, let's get off the idea of comparing dragon and rider pairings to sitcom and or general TV show relationships and move on to our favorites roundup.
So, of course, number one in this man, Oscar putting Damon in his place in front of everyone. Bro, that guy had to eat the biggest piece of humble pie that it probably made him sick. And I loved it. I was
started having nightmares again.
Yep.
And our king shows up. Just got to say.
It's always great to see our king again. I hope they find every reason in the book to bring him back as much as possible.
Side note, apparently I was watching the House That Dragons Built thing, and they said that Patty actually said, if I'm going to do this, I want it to be in the decrepit makeup. That scene where he's telling, you know, Damon about the cost of the crown again and stuff. So love that. Love that. Love Patty.
So dedicated, man. It was fucking great. And just the scene where he's sitting there, he's got the crown in his hand and like he's got his head down, he lifts it up and he's got the fucking like two-faced face going on, you know, and it's just like, ugh. Oh my gosh, it's so good. I love seeing him under any circumstances. So the second one, funny enough, you know, we spoke about it, but I have to say it's just relatable, man. It's just the Alicent disconnecting. She knows that she has no place there anymore. Nobody needs her. She literally has become completely pointless and worthless in that universe right now. And you're right. The fact that people aren't looking for her, where is she? You know, especially now that we know that there's kind of like a little minor uprising going on. You would want to protect those people that are highborn or whatever, but she's just gone. She's just missing. And the third thing, honestly, was just anything with the dragons. I love the dragons. They're like little kitty cats and the little boopies and stuff. Like I want a whole flock of dragons. I want a six pack of dragons is what I want, you know?
And but not maybe not to like, have to feed them.
Yeah, I don't want to have to feed them, and I don't want to like murder people with them. I just want them to like be in my house, like scratch up my fucking couch, and I can get mad at them. But then they're like cute and they roll on their back, and you're like, oh, I'm not mad anymore. That's what I want.
So what you really want is like scaly cats with wings.
Yes. I can deal with that. That's a good consolation for us. Yes.
I mean, piggybacking on that, one of my favorite things about this episode, and it's not just like one moment, it's just a favorite overall thing, was every time Rhaenyra was standing tall in front of a dragon or more than one dragons. The first scene with her and Adam of Hull, it was great, but not so much that. It was that when she gets Vermithor, he is there and she's able to touch him and like have that moment with him, and you see that little smirk on her face, like that power that you must feel, that this gigantic dragon who's not even the one you're bonded to is paying attention to you, and not in a I'm gonna kill you any second sort of way. And then she turns around and it's her just standing so proud right in front of this giant dragon head. Chef's kiss. That should be used on so much promotion shit.
Absolutely.
And then, of course, that end shot with the three dragons behind her. Just wow. When Silverwing like flies up and just perches on top of the castle, and like Vermithor is just there, big hulking self, and Aemon's like, oh shit, gotta run away.
Yeah, exactly. Time to go, guys.
This is a much tinier moment, but when Rhaenyra, after she has met with Adam and she starts pulling out her books and talking about breeding, and Missaria is just like
that was like,
because of course they should be looking outside of the nobility for these riders. It was just the cutest little like and then she tells Rhaenyra about the idea of how many Targaryen bastards there are for sure, or probably surely whatever, are in King's Landing. And also just Rhaenyra's conclusion in that conversation being like, well, they called my sons bastards all this time, so let's raise an army of bastards. Love it.
Yeah,
I mean,
good.
Jace absolutely doesn't love good. It, but
he's a kid. He'll learn to live with it, you know?
Yeah. I'm interested to see where they take this, because there's some things that happen in the text that are, in a way, they're different enough from the way he's acting now that I'm just like, there's a ways to go if they're going to go this direction. It's nothing big that he does or that happens or whatever. It's just like this thing that might get shoved off to the side if he keeps being shenan about it. But my final thing, and honestly, like this might've been my absolute Except for that moment when Rhaenyra turns around in front of Vermithor's head, which as much as the three dragons behind her was amazing at the end, for some reason, that moment of her turning around and Vermithor is like behind her was, except for that one thing. I loved the little scene with Ulf's buddies urging him to try to go and claim a dragon. Yeah. It was such a great little scene. Like, the dialogue was great. The delivery was fucking perfect. It was, in my opinion, a perfect funny aside in this episode. And I want more of these three guys together. Damn it. Absolutely. They were just the way they were like playing off each other, his two buddies. Like, it was great. It was so fucking great. Like, it's weird to me that even like after I finished the episode last night, rewatching it again today before, you know, while I was finishing up our notes and stuff for this recording, I was just like, I cannot get over how fucking good that scene was.
Yeah.
I'm going to be mad if I hear that anybody disliked it, honestly.
There's always going to be somebody who dislikes, always.
I don't see what they could possibly dislike from that little scene.
They'll make something up.
It was perfect. It was perfect. Those guys were great. I love it so much. And I mean, honestly, if they hadn't egged him on, you know, he needed them to egg him on. All right. Any last thoughts?
I don't have any last thoughts. I thought it was a good episode. I would give it, okay, I'm going to say this. I would give it an 8 out of 10, and I would have gave it a 10 out of 10, but I really wanted, like, so the one thing that I don't like is I don't like how fast the dragons take to people and how that's, like, so said and done. Like, I know that's not, like, the point, but it would have loved to have seen one of these, like, horse whisperer kind of moments with, like, Adam and Sea Smoke, right? And in the whole episode, I would have watched an entire episode of him trying to tame it. Like, I would have completely been 100% on board with that. Even though it doesn't really move the plot forward and it could have been done in 5 minutes, which it was. Like, I would have completely have totally got that because I felt like it would have made more of a connection and more of, like, an importance that the dragon is to the dragon rider. And it's not just like a utility where it's like, oh, okay, I know how to shoot straight, so here's my gun and that's it. Right? Like, no, like I would have liked to have seen that there's like, there's more of a bond going on there. So that's the only thing. And I know that they can't do it because they only did 8 episodes and whatever, but.
Well, I mean, even if they had 10, I think it would have, it could have been having it happen with all these dragons or even more than one of them would have been too time consuming, even if they'd had 10 episodes. But that said, keep in mind that Vermithor, Silverwing, and Sea Smoke, they are dragons that have already had riders, as did Vhagar with Aemond, and the kids often grow up with their little dragons. So these dragons have probably been a part of people's lives since they were babies. We have not yet seen a truly wild dragon and what might happen with that. And I do think that they're setting something up there. With the dragon in the veil. So I don't want to say too much because, like, I don't want to get super spoilery, but I think that it's pretty obvious. Like, we've already been told this is a wild dragon, which means it's a dragon that's never had a rider. And that's the one that it seems like Rhaena is going after for some reason. Like, literally, the girl just walked away from her babysitting duties. Like, did they just continue on to Pentos without her? What is going on here? Because she just ran off. And first of all, what was that weird? Sorry, this is a total aside. It's not a favorite at all. It's the opposite, but I didn't know, like, there was no way to talk about it in this episode. What was that weird, like, train leaving the Vale? Is like one cart that didn't even have a covering on it, and the servants were like carrying the little Rhaenyra's youngest kids, and I was like, what is happening? Like, I get that you don't want like pomp and circumstance because you don't want to draw too much attention, but this seems like real way too low-key, and I'm sure it's thing and everything. Like, I know horses a fuck ton of money in a show, so
they're like, guys, we had way too much special effects dragons in this one. Throw them motherfuckers in the radio flyer and we're gonna wheel them down the fucking hill and call it a fucking day. Like, that's it, you know. Like,
somehow no one even notices that Rhaena is just gone, at least that's what it seemed like. So I don't know, we'll see what happens there. 10 out of 10 for that scene with Ulf and his buddies. Really like a 12 out of 10 Targ eyebrows. They filled in all the eyebrows and then some. It was a unibrow.
It was a unibrow.
it was like just, I mean, I guess that makes it one eyebrow, but you know what I mean.
One eyebrow. No, it is the eyebrow is what it is.
11 out of 10 eyebrows, yeah.
Exactly.
But yeah, no, I agree. I really liked this episode. I'll give it an 8 out of 10 and I'll give it an 8 out of 10 because I really liked so much of the episode, but I really am not feeling the whole, like, Rhaenyra being apparently party to the soldiers fencing the dragon seeds in and what that could possibly mean for her in the future.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm saying this as just a show watcher at this point because there's no detailed description of something. Well, and I guess I could be misremembering or wrong, but I don't remember there being a situation where she just herded a fuck ton of people into the Dragonmont and was like, gonna lock the doors here and see who survives.
Exactly, right? It's like the when they used to throw the witches into the lake, you know, like with the rocks and stuff. And it's like, well, if you don't drown, then you're a witch, you know, and if you drown, then you are innocent. Yeah, I don't like that. I don't like it.
Yeah, I'm interested to see what the heck might happen next week, honestly. They got they one episode to wrap the shit up.
I feel like the showrunners are trying to they're trying to make that pendulum swing both ways and not just like keep it one way, right? Because it's like, you know, you had Team Green that was just doing stupid shit. And then now they're like, wait a minute, the other side's going to do stupid shit now also. But unfortunately, the pendulum is really strong in one direction and on the other direction because I ain't never going to be no fucking Team Green. So,
all right. Well, as we close out the episode, we just want to give a shout out to our Heroes Tier patron, Tommy of the TKOK Podcast Network. Thank you so much for supporting us. And thank you to our listeners for joining us for Hot D Takes. Manny and I will, of course, be back next week to cover the season 2 finale. I believe we will have at least one guest. I think two. I got to touch base, but I'm hoping to get Patrick, our fellow Unsullied guest, back, as well as another friend of mine who is a book reader, so that we have like a balanced, two Unsullied, two book readers. So fingers crossed that I can make that work out. If not, I'm sure we will eventually do a huge follow-up episode like we did for season 1. For the most current news and updates about this series, make sure to follow at A Geek Saga on Facebook, Instagram, and or Threads, TikTok, Twitter. But also, please consider backing our Patreon at patreon.com/geeksaga_entertainment. Thank you for listening to the Geek Saga podcast. If you like what you heard, please check out other Geek Saga entertainment endeavors, including the Sagas and Sass webcast and podcast, and Ice and Fire Con.